I'm going to tell you a little bit about my life. It's been colourful, to say the least, I think. I did invite my friends tonight, but I said I'm sad because you're going to hear it again. What you've heard before. You know, you wouldn't go see a film twice or three times or four times unless you really love the film. They must really love me. Right, so I come from Butnell in Stoke-on-Trent, the other side of the town, the other side of the city. I was born in Hanley, but we moved into Butnell when I was only 4 months old, so I'm a Butnell lad. Born and bred, I would near enough say born, but it's not quite, only 4 months. My childhood, I was not a Christian. We only went to school. Can I take this off now for a bit? I went to school, a church school, and we only knew school, and we got traipsed up to the church round the corner at Easter and Christmas, and that's all I knew of church. We did just enough what the teachers told us to do, and that was it. And I think that's what happened with a lot of people. Some got my best mate got more of a grip of it, of Christianity, than I did. I just wanted to get up and leave school and go do what I wanted to do. I was a mum's blue-eyed boy. She thought the sun shone out of me. But my dad left when I was only about 14, 15. My dad and my mum split up and my dad left. I never got on with my dad, I've got to be honest. He would torment me, he broke my spirit, he broke my temper. He actually gave me an anger. But we'll come back to my dad in a little while. But you know, he used to say to me, and I'm very careful, and I tell kids in school this, my dad used to say to me, "You'll never amount to much, lad." He was all for my sister. My sister was very academic. My dad was a clever man. I can't say I was academically shining. I got through okay. All right, really. But my dad used to say, "You'll never make nothing of yourself." He always believed that my sister would, and she did when she was young. I always had a yearning for lorry driving. I always wanted to be a lorry driver even as a young lad. So I grew up with this, I'm never going to be much, inside of me. Not really recognising it, but it gave me a temper. So I could easily lash out, even as a young kid, I'd lash out pretty quickly. And then when my dad left, I had to grow up pretty quick. By the time I was 17, 18, I was the man of the family, man of the house. I had to take care of things. My mum was great. There was only me and my sister, and my nephews lived with my mum. But anything went wrong in the family and friends, it was always Cliff will sort it out. I went lorry driving. As soon as I was 21, I took my licence and I went on the road as a lorry driver. 40 years driving a truck. Loved it. And I did absolutely love the road. I loved everything about it. I loved, as it was, the freedom then. I loved the travelling. I loved seeing places. I loved nicking. I loved lying. I was a perfect lorry driver, you know. Is this your tachograph? Yes, no, it was somebody else's or whatever, you know, whatever. And my truck actually became my God. I adored my truck. It was all dolled up, so to speak. And you've seen them with all the lights all on them. And that was my truck. If I park it up anywhere, I would make sure I could see it, and I'd look back at it, and she'd be there with all the lights adoring it. And beautiful. I loved the truck. The truck wanted anything, the truck had it. But I was a very, very angry lorry driver. Very angry. Now, when you're an angry person, and you've got 40 tons, you are not just an angry person, you are a dangerous angry person. And that's the category I came in. I could wake up in the morning, and it would be most mornings, I lived in the truck, literally I lived in the truck. And we were only talking about the older trucks yesterday about you couldn't hear yourself think in them, you couldn't speak. And I thought the cabs were small, and my missus would go with me. I'd have my blankets and my sleeping bag on the bonnet and it'd be, and I could just see the top of her head. And there's engine would be roaring away, but we still loved it. There was a freedom in it that we loved. And my wife loved me doing it as well, because she got me out of the house for quite a few weeks. So she could get on with what she wanted. And I don't mean anything wrong. She could just have the house to herself, do what she wanted, clean up when she wanted. And I'd just come home, chuck my bag of clothes in, get that washed, down the pub, back out again on the Sunday or the Monday. That was my life. And I loved it. I loved it. But this anger of a lorry driver, if you crossed me on the road, I would have no hesitation but to put the truck across your front of your car, or push you up the odd shoulder, or even push you up the grass verge. I would follow you off the motorway. I would then try and pull you out your car. I would then want to beat the living daylights out of you. And that was anger. Dangerous anger. But I just thought it was normal. Just thought it was normal. That's what us lorry drivers are like. Proper blokes, proper men, we're frightened of nothing. Been out in all weathers, you know, chest deep in snow, we've done it all, what's the worry? But I would be very angry. I'd wake up in the morning and think, who's going to have my wrath today? Who's going to upset me today? Who am I going to hurt today? Not nice way of living. But that's how it worked. That's how I survived. On pure anger. I was also other things, believe it or not. I had a knack of making money anyway. I used to bring contraband back into this country. Not heavy drugs, as we would call it. But I would bring contraband back into the country in quite a big way. We make quite a lot of money out of it. And so I used to think, well, it's only tobacco and alcohol. And you know, the two drugs that are sold legally, they're very dangerous. But because it was legal in this country, all I thought I was doing was robbing Her Majesty's Customs Excise. I didn't want to pay tax. I wanted to make as much money as I could and pay no tax. Me and Ken Dodd would have got on well. I was known for the way I was on the road. I was known that if it wasn't nailed down, I would pinch it. I could lie through my teeth and get away with it. And that's the sort of person I was. There was other stuff that the eye should not see. I'm not going to say too much because there's children about, but can you imagine what I'm talking about? And it's rife, it's getting worse and worse and worse, and you can see it anywhere, on your phone, on the internet. It's there in front of you now. Well, it was all around my cab. I'd got CDs, not CDs, but they were VHS and stuff like that, and it was all not good stuff. And I was known for it. If you wanted a film like that, then ask Cliff, he's got them. That all did change. Trust me, it changed. I couldn't be here tonight. But I couldn't change me. When I got convicted of the Holy Spirit, it was an amazing time for me. My family, which was my sister, Carol, had become a born-again Christian, and then she'd started taking my wife to church with her, and they were saying to me, you need to come along. I need not. I don't want to be coming no Christian thing. I don't want it. It's not for me. I'm not interested. I thought, Jesus, born at Christmas, died at Easter. That's convenient, because we have holidays then. Not the other way around. We have them times because he did. But I thought, well, he's done that. We got, and it was all an extra time for me to get drunk and nurse a hangover. That's what I did. And that's how I lived my life. Do we believe God's got a sense of humour? Do we believe that he can actually play, not tricks on you, but make you go against your will? There was a few things that I despised in a big way, and that was homeless people, drug addicts, alcoholics. Anybody got a caravan? No. Yav, don't take it personal. I hated caravans. They were just a nuisance to me when I was a lorry driver. You know, come April, it was hunting time for caravanners. And I'd be going down the motorway and a caravan would be coming down the slip road, big indicator on, four-wheel drive, thinking he was going to push me, and I'm going, you're not coming on my motorway. I'm here, you can't get on. And then when he finally got past me, he'd come alongside him, he'd be shouting and everything, then he'd pull in, and I'd get alongside him, and I'd go as close to him as I could and suck him into the side of the truck and see him doing this down the mountain. And I think, that'll save you, right? You won't do that again in a hurry. So I had a despise for caravanners. My best mate at the time, Joe, he was a caravaner, he was a lorry driver, and you go, well, there's something wrong with you. No, I didn't like caravaners, they were just a nuisance to me. And I didn't like the homeless and the drug addicts, and I didn't like Welsh people. Only because somebody in Cardiff tried to set my truck on fire one night, so I didn't like the Welsh people. I woke up and there was a big flames in front of the truck. What the heck's going on here? Get it in reverse quick. You couldn't just drive quick then. You got to build the air up and move the truck. So I didn't like Welsh people. And, you know, so God has got a sense of humour. He changed the way I was thinking. What was in my heart, he changed. He gave me a best friend as a Welshman. Caravanners, I'm still a bit like that. Sorry, I can't be perfect. Almost, but not there, quite. But he gave me a heart for the homeless. And I just want to read you about that, really. About, let's see if I can find it, wherever I put it. Oh, I know. This was the verse that I believe God gave me, verses 26. I will give you a new heart and a new spirit. And I'll put them within you. I will take that heart of stone, which I had. I will take that heart of stone out of you and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, that is ways, his laws, and you will keep my judgments and do them. And I believe that's the Bible verse that I can only use to say that's what God did. Let me tell you, folks, I'll tell you, I'll come to the Lord in a minute, but let me tell you, you can do anything really with your body. I was going to say I'm fat then, but you know, I'm big. But I can go on a diet and I could lose weight. And if I got nowhere, I could wear a wig. Or if I got too much hair, I can have it cut. I can have my facelift. I can have loads of stuff done with my body. But you can't do nothing with your heart. Only God can do that. Only He can change your heart. You can change your looks, but you can't change your heart. He will change your heart when you surrender to Him. So how did I come to the Lord? Got the wife, got my sister plaguing me about going to church in Butnell. No, don't want, no, shan't be there. Went to baptism, freaked me out, saw all the ceiling ticklers, thought, this ain't for me, I'm off. And that's what happened. And I thought, when I got home, he said, could you enjoy that? You're bonkers. Something's up with you. Whatever's going on there? Because I'd been used to go in church, sit down, shut up, man speaks, somebody sings, you go. Done. And then we get into this church and everybody's talking and enjoying and laughing in church. Hallelujah. And I'm thinking, something wrong here. So it didn't really bode well for me at the beginning. Though I'd got people in that church, a little church in Butnell, most of you know Trevor Weaver. I was in his church. And I got people in his church that were praying for me. And there was one man named John Burgess and John Deacon. They were praying for me earnestly. They didn't even know me. So I urge you to pray for people. Pray for them. Don't give up on them. Because if people like that had finished with me, I would never have come. It's only through their prayer, and God heard their prayers. John Burgess spoke to my wife, led her to the Lord. His wife said, she came down home one day. We weren't married. We'd been together for 30-odd years. Came down, and she said to me, there's a man at church said we should be married. We shouldn't be living like this. So I said, listen, Doug, you go back up that church, and you tell that man, mind his own business, or else I'll be up there and I'll knock his lights out. The man became one of my best friends. But I did say it, she'd tell you honestly. I was struck down with trigeminal nerve disorder. Does anyone know what that is? It's an excruciating pain that goes from here, right down your face, down your neck, down your shoulders, and your jaw. You do not know how to get rid of it. And then, some years ago, there was no way you could get rid of it. And I got money. I'd smuggled enough stuff in. I was made of money. I could do whatever I wanted. I could have whatever I wanted, whether it be cars, houses, anything I wanted, I could get it. I could buy it off the back of what I'd made, or I could pinch it. It didn't matter. But I went to see specialists, top specialists, and they said, there's nothing we can do for you. There's nothing we can do for this condition. Many of them as you want. 30, 40 a day, painkillers, just take them, like Smarties. This went on for quite a while. And I'd set off on a Monday morning with the truck or a Sunday afternoon. And one Monday morning, I'm off with the truck and I've got my big bag of tablets here alongside of me. And it'd be about 11 o'clock on a Monday morning. And I always remember I was just going down the M5 and my sister rang. I mean, it was the old cab phones where you could actually pick the phone up then, and police didn't do anything. Hello? Hi, Doug. You all right? Yeah, I'm okay. Still in pain. Excruciating. We used to measure pain, I don't know if you do, between 1 and 10. How bad's the pain? Like the doctors do, I think. Now. How bad's the pain? It was like 9s coming up to 10s. It was killing me. It was taking everything away from me. Now, they said I could have had an operation and they'd have severed the nerve, but I'd had face paralysis. Well, I was a good-looking lad. I didn't want that. So I opted for the tablets. But them weren't going to work. So she said to me, have you ever thought of asking Jesus to heal you? My cab went blue. The language was shocking. And I said, I don't want to know about Jesus. Don't keep on. Bang. But just before I put the phone down, I heard her say, what have you got to lose? What have you got to lose by asking? Psh, phone down. And about half an hour later, this is going on in my head. What have I got to lose? What have we got to lose for asking Jesus? If it works, it's worked. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I've lost nothing. And I'm not going to say I did this intentionally, but I grabbed my tablet and in, in my temper, in my anger, I threw him out the cab window. And as I saw him bouncing across the motorway, and I thought, well, that's me done. I aren't home now for another week or so. Where am I going to get tablets from? I couldn't get medication. It was specialist stuff. I couldn't get it. So a little bit further down, it was, okay then, we'll give this Jesus fella a crack. See what he can do. And it was a simple thing, and it was, right then, Jesus, if you're real, you heal me, and I'll believe in you. And I'll serve you. You heal me. Had I got faith in it? Nah. I'd got no real big faith in it. I know I've got a lot of people praying for me for it, but I've got no real faith in it. But it was probably, well, I've said it now. That'll get them off me back. But as the nights went on, I used to sleep in the cab. And as the Monday night come, I could hardly sleep most times. But I slept a couple of 3 hours. I slept peacefully. The pain was slowly going down during the week. Come Friday, the pain had gone. Uh-oh. He's real. He's done it. I'm into Southampton. Load me back for the Midlands. Get me back home. Quick. So they got me a load up and I headed back for Stoke on the Saturday. Now I'm thinking, how am I going to tell our Carol and Lottie? I've been healed. And who's healed me? I thought there was a bit of, well, there isn't a bit, there's a lot of humble pie to be eaten here, Cliff. I think if it had been a milkman, there'd have been trouble. I said, yeah, it's me. How have you gone on? I said, don't you not going to believe this? But the pain's gone. And I told her what happened. We had tears and what have you. And she says, you better go across to Carol. Ooh, that was the bit. Telling Carol. Because when you've got to say to somebody, you know you were right. But that's what happened. He'd heal me. He was real. Now, am I going to be true to him? Because he'd been faithful to me. And things started happening. Have you noticed? We want people to come to the Lord. And people think if they come to the Lord, if they come to the church, they've got to change. And what have we said? You can't change. He changes you. Come as you are. With all your baggage and all your rubbish and all your problems and all the pressures and everything that you've got, bring it to the altar. And that was my next thing I had to do. But you know, he cleaned me up. The stuff that was in my cab got set on fire. I burnt the lot in a big bin. I wouldn't give it to anybody. The yard where I was working went mad. What have you done that for? Everything sort of got cleaned up. I remember the place where I was parking the truck, I went up to their stores and I said to John, can I have a bowl for my truck? And he says, yeah, go out yourself, Cliff, get what you want. It was my own truck. I'd got my own business by then and I was making decent money. And it ended up, as I walked up to the stores and I got my big coat on, and so it was like, and this was when I'd become a Christian, remember? And it was like, I was like a poacher. I got bulbs everywhere. And I walked down the workshop, and I cannot say I honestly ever hear God speaking to me verbally. But it was that impressed on me. What are you doing? Take them back. Haven't you got enough money to buy your own? Haven't you made you rich enough to buy your own? Why are you making yourself a thief? And the Spirit was pressing, and I thought, oh, I took them all back, put all the bulbs back. And then there was me swearing. I stopped swearing. And I didn't notice I'd stopped swearing, but other people noticed. And I went in the yard one day, in a transport yard. You can imagine a lorry, yard full of lorry drivers and, you know, the roughy-toughy guys these are. And I'd hear the swearing, and I said, do you have to keep swearing? Every word's effing and blinding. Why? And he went, what about you? And then it was evident that I'd stopped swearing. Because if I spoke to you, even individually, I'd always be afraid that I might just slip out. So it was holding me back. So then we got baptized. My whole family got baptized. All of us, and I mean all of us. Great day. And then we got married. We had a great day. We had a great wedding down at Bucknell. My nephew, he'd been in the same ilk as me. He got married the year before me, and then we got married. And we didn't get married because we loved one another any more than we did the day before we got married. We did so we could be right before God. That's the truth. I want to be right before God. The baptism, loved it. So life started to change. And my sister said to me, I can see you speaking it in front of a church. Ooh. I said, I don't think so. No. And I spoke once in Bucknell Church, and she says, there you are. I said, no, that's your once. That's it now, I'm done. But I love to speak to people. I love to share with people. This year, no, last year now, we got invited to go to Buckingham Palace. How's that? I had a shirt and tie on. My wife had a big hat on. And we went to see the Queen for a garden party. A scruffy, rough lorry driver that would steal, that would lie, and was even an adulterer, I've had my permission, I can tell you that, was there, and I'm in the presence of royalty. But I'd been in the presence of higher royalty. Higher royalty. But we had an amazing day, didn't we, Lot? Big hat. Lottie got talking to the princesses, what their name? Beatrice and Eugene. As soon as they saw me, they ran. I know time's getting on now, but my dad, told you I couldn't do my dad. My dad couldn't do me. Whenever we met, we would like oil and water. We would clash. And he lived on the Isle of Wight. He couldn't get any further away. He lived on the Isle of Wight. And I used to call in now and again when I was down Southampton. But we still sort of, there was this animosity that would go on. You know, I think he was glad to see the back of me, and I was glad to get back on the ferry. But we were okay. And then when my mum died, he remarried. A very nice lady, actually. And we all thought she would die before my dad, but it was the other way around. No, he would die before her, but she died before him. And then my dad came to live back in Bucknell, where I live, and we got him a bungalow less than 200 yards from where I live. And God, and this is God, I tell you, there's no doubt about it, started a reconciliation between me and my dad. I used to sit with him. I used to talk to him. He used to call me Holy Joe because I'd bang on about the Bible. But I didn't know that my dad was a man that would pray every day. He was a man that loved nature. And he used to say to you, look what God's given us here, these birds, these squirrels in the trees they were clipping. And I could not agree with him. It was beautiful. But I didn't realise this is where he was. And where I'd come to be. And he would tell me sister, but he wouldn't tell me how proud he was of me. A man that wouldn't make much of himself, run his own business, made his own money. I did make some money legally, by the way. It wasn't all illegal. I did work hard for many, many years driving trucks that was legal. But if I can... I would talk to my dad. So I'll get it in a minute. The Bible reading that I wanted to read to you is this. This is how I feel God is for me. Therefore, this is in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7. Therefore, I love that word, therefore. Therefore. It's like a bit of an authority stamped already, isn't it? It's like, you listen. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has gone and the new has come. Are we up there? So I pressed on with my dad, and so did my sister, and so did Lottie, and so did the people that visited him. At the age of 80, I baptized my dad. Not me 80, him 80. And that's my dad going through the baptism waters. I think he was a bit old, he was probably about 81 there. And I went up and I was telling him we'd got a baptism in the church. And he said, what is this baptism? And I told him what it was all about. And he says, well, why can't I be baptized? I said, there's no reason why you can't be baptized. I won't be baptized. That's me and Trevor Weaver, Big Trev. And we baptized my dad. He's got a black eye there. I didn't give it him. But I come to love him. And he come to love me. And it was a precious time, and my dad died, and I was sad to see him go, but we all get older, and we're all going to shuffle off this mortal coil. But the question is, where are we going? Where are you going when you die? That's the question. Where are we going when we die? I know where he is, because he's given his heart to the Lord. He knew Jesus. And John 3:16, that's all he commands of us. But whoever knows him, whoever you knows his name, we sang what a wonderful name it is. We just have to have that relationship. I don't think I need to ask if you've not got a relationship with Jesus tonight. If you've not got a relationship with Jesus tonight, well, you need to get back into him. Don't leave this place tonight until you've got right standing with God. Through his son Jesus. We ask this because it's so easy as Christians for us to backslide. So easy. And we call it backsliding. Because that way we don't notice it happening. Because if it was steps, you'd feel it. You'd go in increments. But no, Satan's very crafty. And the best of us can backslide. And I can hold my hand up to that. And I haven't done it once, probably done it several times. And I've got to get myself back in the position and be right with God. Stand so I can stand before him. Nobody knows the time of the hour when we're going to leave this earth. Are we ready? As individuals, are we ready? As a church, are we ready? Are we ready for that return of Jesus even? But are we ready? Should it be an untimely death? If it isn't, if you're not ready, don't go tonight. See the pastors of the church. I'll stay right behind and get yourself right before God. Or just accept him if you haven't already accepted him as your Lord and Saviour.